Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The trend, obviously, for years now, for many years, really for about 15, 16 years, has been like, how shitty can a show make you feel? How big of an anti-hero can the main character be? TV's not supposed to make you feel good anymore. It's kind of been the wisdom, really. But this show made me feel better than any of those old shows on Friday night on ABC. I mean, honestly.
The Stream Police Podcast is brought to you by OverdueReview.com. Want something more in-depth than a sarcastic, pretentious, 140-character review of your favorite movie? Read long-form reviews of movies, TV, and music from the distant and recent past at OverdueReview.com.
Hello again, my friend in television, my buddy in couch potatoism, and welcome to another edition of the Stream Police Podcast. I'm Clint Davis, the movies and TV editor at OverdueReview.com, and we bring you this show every couple weeks, where we talk about the best things streaming right now in television, movies, and music. And we're going to cover all those in the next, I don't know, however long we decide to go right here on this episode of the show. Thank you very much for spending some time with me. Once again, we'll be hearing from our music editor, Andy Sedlak, coming up in just a little bit. But for now, you belong to me. Let me go ahead and light my stogie up as I start every show here in my closet in Cincinnati, Ohio, breaking every fire code under the sun. Good stuff. Smoking a stogie in my closet in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's the way I like to do it. So if you listen to this show at all regularly, you know that I like to begin each episode by talking about a TV show theme song, because our favorite TV shows begin with TV show theme songs. So why shouldn't your favorite TV, your favorite audio show about TV shows start with a theme song as well? So I wanted something creepy for this episode, since we're kind of close to Halloween here. I wanted a creepy theme song, one that kind of scares you, one that just weirds you out. I don't know. And looking at my list, I've got like this short list I've made of theme songs that I've been pulling from every time I do this segment. I pull one from that list, and it's a pretty long list. I've got like 40 shows on there right now, so I'll never get through all of them. But it's like my good short list, and you know, it's being updated all the time. So I had a few on that list that were like eerie theme songs, and I decided ultimately, though, to go with the one that I think is the creepiest theme song ever made for any TV show. That's why this week's pick for the greatest TV show theme song of all time is the theme song from American Horror Story Hotel. Now, if you've ever watched American Horror Story, you know that one of the show's signatures is its opening theme and opening title imagery, which both of those change slightly each season until the current sixth season, which has irritated fans for good reason, I feel like, because it is one of the real hallmarks of the show is the theme song and the opening imagery. They're just stellar each time, and they're both so they're like the creepiest part of the entire show, honestly. I remember being really impressed with the first season's opening. I hadn't watched the first season of the show. My wife watched it on Netflix, and for whatever reason, I just hadn't watched it. I'd seen promos, and I didn't know if I'd really be into it, and I don't really like ghost stories, and that one was like a ghost story in a haunted house kind of thing, so I was like, all right, whatever. But she watched it and loved it, and she's like, she showed me the opening titles once, because she's like, you got to see the opening theme, it just really creeps me out, and I was really impressed by the opening theme. It was. It's so creepy, and just the imagery was so cool, and it was all explained later in the show, so it was really well done. And I've enjoyed every opening title and opening theme song to every season of American Horror Story so far, but I think the title music for Season 5, American Horror Story Hotel, had the best one yet. So just imagine that scratchy, strange music playing as you look at images of this disgusting, sleazy hotel with bloody upholstery on the couches and on the beds and weirdos crawling out of a stitched-up mattress. I think the song is enough to make your skin crawl without any images, but adding the imagery just makes it even more creepy. Now, that song was written for the show, and it's just simply called American Horror Story Hotel. And the song was composed by Charlie Clouser, who's a member of Nine Inch Nails. It makes sense when you hear the sound and the style of that song. And it was also co-written by American Horror Story sound designer Cesar Davila Irizarry. And makes sense, you know, to have the sound designer working on this song because it incorporates some sound effects from the show and some natural sounds like doors creaking and things like that into the theme song. And it's not exactly like a song that you can dance to or one that you're going to want to get out of your seat when you hear or anything like that. But you're watching the show with no lights on. It's late at night. You got the wind outside causing trees to scratch the windows. And then this song comes on at the opening of the episode, and it just does its job perfectly. Amazingly, when I was doing my research for this segment, I realized that American Horror Story has never won the Emmy for Best Opening Title Design, despite being nominated three times for that award since 2012. And the opening titles are such a hallmark of the show, and they're so well done every season. The first season's titles were designed by the guy who did the opening titles to Seven, if you remember what the opening to that looked like. And that opening still just creeps me out to this day. And I have to imagine it's the same guy. He's probably done them for every season. But it's amazing that that show has never won the Emmy for that, because when I think of great opening title sequences, not just the song, but the images as well, Horror Story is really one of the first shows I think of, and they change it every season. So it's very well done, and I'm shocked they have not won the Emmy for it yet. There have been five solid theme songs for American Horror Story over the years, but for my money, Hotel was its best, and that's my pick for this week's greatest TV show theme song of all time. And it wasn't just the theme song in Hotel. There was a lot of great music in that season. I thought that was really a clinic being put on as far as choosing music. And, the songs that they used were just so well done. I remember I talked about the pilot episode on an episode here of The Stream Police last year, and how that pilot episode just had so much good music in it. And it really set the scene of the show so well. And I really dug that season a lot. That was one of my favorites. But still, my favorite season of Horror Story remains Coven. I just think that's the high water mark. And I haven't really liked this season at all. I watched the first couple episodes with my wife, and I got to say, I think it's the most boring season that they've done so far. I don't like the stylistic departure. I think it's awkward, and it takes away some of the suspense, because obviously we know that these characters are going to get out of this alive since we're seeing interviews with them later. And I don't know, I just think it's kind of a distracting way to do the show, and I think it cuts down on the scares a little bit in order to be maybe a little bit more stylistically interesting. But that's I didn't really know that was necessary on this show. So anyways, here's my quick thoughts on the sixth season, Roanoke, of American Horror Story so far. But speaking of fall television, I wanted to give you my thoughts so far on fall TV 2016. And I gave you my fall TV preview in the last two episodes of the show. I gave you five shows premiering in September that I thought looked like they were worth your time, five shows also premiering in October that I thought were worth your time. I haven't gotten to watch any of the October shows yet. But I've watched all five of the September shows, at least a few episodes of each of those shows, and I've enjoyed all five of them, but I want to talk about four of them specifically with you here and my thoughts on those four shows. So let me start with Better Things on FX. And all things considered, I'm going to call this my favorite new television show of fall 2016. I just have felt so, I don't know, I've just enjoyed watching this show so much. Every week I look forward to a new episode of Better Things. And I think Pamela Adlon, who stars in it, is just so goddamn good as a lead. And her character on the show feels so real and so wise and so sweet. All at once. And this show, if you haven't watched it, Better Things is about a single middle-aged mom, played by Pamela Adlon, and her three young daughters who live at home with her in Los Angeles. So it sounds like a pretty traditional setup for a show, right? I mean, we got the single parent, we've got the kids, growing pains happening. But so it's like a traditional sitcom in some ways, mostly that we follow a family and that we seem to learn some lessons along the way. But the difference is that these characters all feel real and dynamic. In just the first five episodes of Better Things, almost every character has grown or changed in some way since the premiere. And that, to me, is a remarkable feat because we're not just trying to reset the clock at the end of every episode. That was the issue with, like, every sitcom back in the day. I mean, it didn't matter. Like, Full House, if you watched an episode in the first season and then you came back and you watched an episode, like, in the third season, really nothing had changed. I mean, except for maybe, Uncle Jesse's love life has, you know, a different person involved in it, or he's married now and he's got kids now. That was really the only thing that changed. And obviously the ages of the characters. But other than that, I mean, it was almost like they never remembered what happened to them the week before. So what was the point in sticking around and watching every single episode? On a show like Better Things, though, these characters are growing, they're changing week by week, and they just feel real. And I got to say that Pam's character, her name is Sam on the show, she's one of the best moms I've ever seen on TV. And Better Things goes to show you that your main character doesn't have to be this big fuck-up or this horrible person in order to be an interesting character or a meaningful show. She's like a good parent, she's a smart person, she's a hard worker, and she also makes for an interesting character. She's really, I mean, I'm trying to think about her flaws, and they're not really that evident. I mean, she's not a character that has a lot of these flaws, but it doesn't matter. She still feels real. I'm not saying she's perfect, but, I mean, really, she's a good mom, and she's really like the mom that we kind of all wish we could have. And I'm telling you, there have been moments in this show that have nearly brought me to tears because they're so well done and so sweet and just handled with such just great execution all the way around. The directing style of the show is also interesting. We get some long takes, but also we get plenty of quick scenes that keep the pace fast. And I haven't felt bored when watching this show at all. The interactions between the characters are also really interesting. Sometimes it's grating to hear, you know, characters arguing, but it's a necessary part of this show as we've got this, you know, woman who's in her late 40s and she's trying to relate to and arguing with teenage girls. And, you know, I mean, how could, you know, the separation couldn't be really more wide, especially with, you know, the advances in technology that have been made since Sam was a kid and now since her kids are growing up. So it's hard for them to relate sometimes, but, you know, at the human level, they are really able to relate well. And that's really because of how strong a character Sam is, I think. So the pace of the show is really well done. And this show doesn't hurt your head like Louis did at times. It's not really like overly artistic or anything. There's not a whole lot of metaphors on screen. You don't have to think so much about it. And I bring up Louis because the show was co-created by Louis C.K. and it's produced by all the same people who produced Louis, and it's on FX, and Pamela Adlon was on Louis as well. But this show's very different from that. So if you want something a little easier to watch, this is a good pick for you. And let's just remember once again, Adlon is the lead in a television series, and she's a 50-year-old woman in real life. She's 50 years old. She's never played the lead in a series before this, except for doing voice work. Her most famous role was she did the voice of Bobby Hill in King of the Hill over the years. And when you hear her talk, that's all you can hear because she has this really signature raspy voice. But this is why I love FX. Again, 50-year-old woman. She's never played the lead in a series before. She gets to lead this show. She's co-writing episodes, co-creating the show, producing it, and just knocking it out of the park. This is my favorite new show of fall 2016. Better Things on FX. Could not recommend it any more to you. And while I really love Better Things, it's followed closely by another FX show that I recommended to you a couple episodes ago, Atlanta. And now that I've watched about five or six episodes of this show so far, this is also one of my favorites of this year. There's an authenticity about this show that you really don't find in a lot of television series. And this is also a great addition for FX. It's a bit more story-driven than Better Things is. Better Things is just about this family, and it's really a character study. But what Atlanta is about, it's got like a central plot, a driving narrative, and it's about these three guys who are really trying to make it in the rap business. One as a promoter, one as a rapper, and one as, I don't really know, he's just kind of support for the other two, and really just acts as comic relief sometimes. But they have a definite goal in mind. They want to make it in the Atlanta rap game, and they want to be taken seriously, and that's kind of the story of this show. I called it before, I said it was like the anti-Empire, because they have no money at all, and they're working with very limited resources, and we really don't ever see them recording. This is just trying to basically build up the rep for this local Atlanta rapper and get him played on radio and things like that. We follow a group of characters who have a distinct goal they're trying to achieve, and that, you know, is always interesting in a TV show. The main character is a black man in his late 20s, early 30s in Atlanta. He's played by Donald Glover, who created the show, produces the show. He's written or co-written every episode of the show that's been on so far, and his fingerprints are just all over this thing, and he's doing a great job. He doesn't have a real solid job. He's an Ivy League dropout. He's got a young daughter with a hardworking woman that isn't sure why she keeps him around. So, again, the characters are interesting, and we kind of get to know all of them just as the show goes on. Once again, the show just feels real. Atlanta feels real when you watch it, with the exception of one character who, to me, drags the show down a bit in my mind by being too cartoonish. And if you're watching the show, that character would be Darius. That's the guy I'm talking about here. He just takes me out of it. He's the only person in the show that takes me out of it, and that's what kind of bumps Atlanta down a little bit, honestly, is just the way Darius has been. I just don't feel that he's real at all, and he is funny. He's obviously some comic relief, but just doesn't feel very real in a show that feels so authentic. The cast is mostly made up of unknowns in Atlanta, but they all nail it, and this is a good look at trying to figure out what you want to be in the world. That's really what the crux of this show is. I was surprised at how funny this show is at times. It has me cracking up in most of the episodes, just watching these broke-ass guys try to make something of themselves. And it's also a good look at friendship, and those are some of the reasons why I really like Atlanta. I think it's one of the best new shows that we've seen come on TV in fall 2016.
I should have just went home, boy. Instead, I'm in here locked up because of this food I ain't seen about 11 years, man. Why was that 5 points about to kiss the bus, you feel me? And this nigga I ain't seen 11 years come up and talk to my man, listen, hey, boy, I ain't seen you about 11 years, boy, let's hang out. They go get a beer. So I follow him to the goddamn gas station. We get two beers. They ain't get but two of them, but they with the big ones, though. They with the big ones. You know, anyway, so nigga like, man, come on, let's go to the house and drink them. So we get to the house, like, man, my old lady here, so we just gonna drink them on the porch. Feel me? And I'm like, boy, APD be rolling through here, boy. He done talk me into it, so sure enough, AP didn't roll up and seen the goddamn two cans out there. Light me up for a pub intoxication. You know what I'm talking about? Now, I'm in here, man, because this nigga, man, I ain't seen 11 years, man. I'm going to be in here till Tuesday because I ain't cash my check.
That's messed up.
So just, again, two very solid shows joining the lineup at FX, two half-hour shows that I have really dug a lot this year, Better Things and Atlanta. Now let me talk about two shows that are new on Amazon for the fall, both of which I've watched all the way through. I'm going to tell you whether I like them or not. First off, let me start with One Mississippi on Amazon. Six half-hour episodes, and I loved this show. Loved it. Let me underline that again. Only six episodes, half-hour each, and it made me feel so good. And this show made me laugh so much. Seriously, I cannot think of a show that made me feel better on the inside than One Mississippi in recent years. Because, you know, TV now, the trend obviously for years now, for many years, really for about 15, 16 years, has been like, how shitty can a show make you feel? How big of an anti-hero can the main character be? How flawed a human being can we follow and still root for? That's what really has made TV into the art form that it is. Now, it's not about feeling good. It's not like Friday night with the family, let's watch a show anymore. Those days are bygone, and those days have kind of become cliche, and they've kind of become cheesy over the years. So TV's not supposed to make you feel good anymore. It's kind of been the wisdom, really. But One Mississippi is such a great exception to that. This show made me feel better than any of those old shows on Friday night on ABC. I mean, honestly, it brought those kind of same kind of feelings into me as I watched it. And I didn't expect it at all. I thought this was going to be kind of a dark show based on, you know, who was bringing it out. A bunch of, you know, bitter stand-up comedians get together and write a show. You don't expect it to make you feel so good. Tig Notaro stars in One Mississippi as a cancer survivor who's pulled from her home in Los Angeles to her hometown in Mississippi when an accident causes her mom to be put on life support. And then in the first episode, she's got to pull the plug on her mom and go on without her. So that all happens in the first episode and really sets in motion this story where she sticks around in her hometown for a little bit while they get things settled with the estate and all that. And we watch as Tig gets reacquainted with her brother and her stepfather, both interesting characters who clearly love her but have different ways of showing it. It's not always clear if Tig loves them, although she does, and she does end up showing it. But she's a little bit frosty at times, but really warms up over the show. This story is all about how complicated family relationships can be, but you know, ultimately how meaningful they can be as well. That's what I took away from these six episodes of One Mississippi. I loved the characters in this show. And it was incredible how close I felt to them after just six half-hour episodes. Again, the whole season is six half-hour episodes. So we're talking about really less than 3 hours. And I felt so drawn into these characters. I felt like I knew them so well, and I did not want the show to end. Honestly, I wanted it to go on for 10 more episodes just to, you know, kind of see them interact with each other some more. It was really a joy to watch. I would really highly recommend One Mississippi on Amazon. Give it a watch. It's so short, there's absolutely no reason for you not to give this thing a shot. And also, it's rated TV-14. Again, what's like a great show you can think of that was rated TV-14 in recent years that wasn't on a network? So if you got teenagers and you know, like older kids, it's a fine show to watch with them. It really won't make you feel awkward or anything like that. There's not much of that in this show. It does tackle some real stuff, and it tackles some identity issues and things like that, but ultimately, the show just made me feel so good. I really, really enjoyed One Mississippi, and I'm glad that shows like this are being made and that Amazon is a place where people can make shows like this. Again, six episodes to me felt a little short in this case. I would have probably rather seen 10 episodes, but the show does set it up for set itself up for a second season, I should say, and hopefully we see that coming in years to come. So One Mississippi on Amazon, again, high marks for that one from me.
What is it?
It's a package for Mom.
Well, that's not surprising. She was a great one for impulse purchasing.
This is probably the last thing she ever bought.
Well, you probably shouldn't open it.
Shame they're too small, because I could use some new bras.
But
it was a joke.
I see. Well, maybe you know someone who can use them.
I'm trying to think, do I know anybody with boobs?
And finally, one more show right now that debuted in September on Amazon is Fleabag. And this show is also six episodes that are half hour each, but this one doesn't make you feel so good, and I wasn't as impressed with this show overall. I liked it for some reasons and didn't like it for others, so I'm not going to give this one as high marks. Fleabag follows this unnamed 20-something single woman in London and her complicated relationship really with herself. It's really like a person versus self kind of conflict all throughout this story. I mean, she seems to really loathe herself a lot, and you don't really know why until we get to the last episode, and I'll get to that in a second. I like the style and the acting on Fleabag, but I just didn't feel as pulled in by it as these other shows that I've talked about. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is the star of the show, and she wrote all six episodes of it, and I feel like she had to tap into some dark things in herself in order to put the show out there, and I like Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I think she's very good in the show, very honest. She's funny, seems like a natural, and I hope we see her more out there. It's really cool that she wrote every episode of this show as well. The main character, though, is not someone that you want to model your life after at all. She's single. She lives in a big city. She owns a small business. She has a handful of sex partners. But absolutely none of it looks glamorous at all. And none of it seems to fulfill her in the least bit. I mean, that sounds like a setup where it would be like this glamorous thing. And oh my God, I mean, she owns this business. She lives in one of the great cities of the world. She's single. She's kind of does whatever she wants. But none of it fulfills her. None of it makes her happy. And honestly, it seems like she's trying to go out of her way to make herself unhappy as the show goes on. The show uses flashbacks well, and it had a twist in the final episode that I didn't see coming at all, and really made things poignant. I felt like it was a poignant ending to the show that really made the entire season make sense in my mind. But then, unfortunately, in the final scene, it got a little bit sentimental, and I didn't care for that. I could have done without the final scene of the first season. But, you know, if you liked Alfie, if you've ever seen that movie, if you liked that, give this one a watch because it's very similar to Alfie. And if you like blunt, graphic comedy, this is strong TVMA kind of stuff. This is a hard TVMA, honestly. You should check this show out if you like that kind of thing. And if you are going to watch it, though, watch it all the way through because, like I said, the ending really makes the entire season make sense and makes it even more poignant. So I enjoyed the show. I didn't love it, though, like I did these other three shows that I've talked about. But Fleabag right now is on Amazon. Again, wouldn't say it was a bad show at all. I will probably come back and watch the second season of it. But it just didn't pull me in quite the same and didn't impress me quite as much as those other shows. So, again, Better Things on FX, Atlanta on FX, One Mississippi on Amazon. Highest marks for those shows. Definitely check those out if you get a chance. And Fleabag on Amazon, I'm a little bit more tepid on, but it's there for you. And again, not bad. And I think we're seeing the introduction of a person in Phoebe Waller-Bridge that hopefully will become like a comedy star that we'll see around for a little while because she's definitely got a lot of talent, and it's shown in this first season of Fleabag. I'm also watching Pitch. I'm watching This Is Us on NBC. I'm watching How to Get Away with Murder again on ABC. I love that show dearly. And The Last Man on Earth on Fox. So those are the other shows I'm watching right now. I'll be talking about those in the coming weeks, but let me just reiterate one more time real quick how great How to Get Away with Murder is. That's the show I look forward to more than any other show every week, and it never disappoints me. So, again, never too late to get into it. First season, the first two seasons actually now might be on Netflix. I know the first season was, but check those out and get into How to Get Away with Murder if you haven't watched it, because it's just a cool show, and it's just a fun one to talk with people about if they've also watched it. So, anyways, that's kind of what I'm watching right now and what I would recommend maybe you getting into as well if you're looking for new shows to pick up this season. All right, I'm going to go ahead and take a break, pass things over to Andy Sedlak, our music editor, and I'll be back with a new segment, and I'm going to welcome somebody into the closet for the first time ever here on the Stream Police coming up after Andy. Take it away, Mr. Sedlak.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Is anybody else worn out on politics? God. Oh, God. I'll tell you. We are just limping toward election day, aren't we? In moments like these, I think we need music more than ever. Need harmony more than ever. So the number one song in the country right now, it's called Closer by the Chainsmokers and Halsey.
So baby, pull me closer in the backseat.
Yeah, there it is. number one last week, too. Been on the charts, a total of 9 weeks. Let's hear a little bit more of it.
The sheets right off the corner of the mattress that you stole from your roommate back in Boulder.
The song also number one in Canada. The biggest song in the UK at the moment is called Say You Won't Go. It's by James Arthur.
I'm so in love with you, and I hope you know, darling, your love is more than worth this weight of gold.
In Germany, the number one song is called Human by Rag and Bone Man.
I'm only human after all.
Not a bad song, really. In Japan, I can't pronounce either the group or the title of the song, but it goes like this. The point of this is not to give you a tour around the globe. It's not to give you culture. Point is not to compare and contrast. The point, my friends, is that while the most popular songs in the world at the moment have rock influences, none of them are rock and roll songs. The genre has spent decades as the most dominant musical art form in the world. In the world. But this is not rock's moment. That's all there is to it. Just like 1954 was Elvis Presley's moment when he released That's All Right, 2016 does not belong to rock. There's an ebb and flow to things. It's nature. Though there is a rock song that I do want to recommend to you. It's a new song. I'll tell you right now, it won't burn up the charts. Although it's good enough to. It alone will not fill stadiums, although it would sound great in one. It may or may not even break into the artist's set list. Although I do think that fans could learn to love it. The song is by Sting. It's called I Can't Stop Thinking About You.
I can't stop.
This thing is brand new. Just dropped a couple weeks ago. It made me lean forward. And then I wanted to get in the car, put the windows down, and listen again and again and again.
That's why I'm searching night and day. This heart's a lonely hunter. These hands are frozen fists. I can't stop thinking about you. I don't care if you exist.
I never considered myself a Sting guy. It was too intellectual or something. And I'm not anti-intellect. The artists that I listen to are all incredibly well-read, and their music is intellectual, but for the most part, it's emotionally intellectual. Sting writes in a historical sense, and I never found it to be the easiest to relate to. I don't like The Police too much. Every song to me sounded like this. People are going to kill me for that. It's just, that's fine. It's the way I've always felt. Irritating. But you know what? This new song, God, I'm all in, baby. All in.
I can't stop thinking about you.
Sting's new record was recorded as a rock album that's worth noting. New record called 57th and 9th, named after the New York City intersection that he had to cross every day to get to the recording studio. But isn't it funny that some artists will just sneak up on you like that? Country music was kind of that way to me. I was raised on rock, but gradually began to appreciate country music. Sometimes a country song will just come on by an artist I had never thought much about, and bam, just immediate. This song was that way a few years ago. I was actually in Nashville a couple weekends ago. I had never been before, but the wife and I went down for our anniversary weekend. It was fun. Bar after bar after bar, band after band after band. One band on the first floor of the bar, another band on the second floor, and a third band up on the rooftop. We heard a lot of music, but here is my takeaway in talking about Nashville. It's not critical. All of the bands were really pretty polished, but more than that, they all had an act. They'd banter with the audience. They'd banter with themselves. You could tell that it was rehearsed, but that didn't bother me because more than just getting up and playing a few songs, they wanted to entertain. They wanted to entertain. Nashville is a town built on entertainment. Country music is the way to get there. It's the vehicle. I'll give you an example of this. At the end of one set that we were listening to, a tall, lanky dude in a cowboy hat says, "That's it for me tonight. I've got to get home because my wife plans on getting pregnant, and I'd like to be there this time." Then he says, "The last time she had a child, the baby came out with red hair, had a little red beard." He turns around and looks at his bass player, who's got a big red beard. Bass player raises his arms like, whoops. The audience loved it. They all had an act. Some were tough guys, others were like the friendly stoners, but nobody didn't banter. They were all gregarious. They were all there to entertain. Country music was the vehicle. And on Broadway, which is a street where a hub of music clubs are concentrated, they were all pretty fun, a little hammy. We are talking about country music. But they all had chops, and they kept the corn coming in a good way. It's a likable town. And everybody played this song.
You're as smooth as Tennessee whiskey.
And that's totally cool. I felt like we were listening to like a new standard being developed. We're going to hear that song forever. All right, five more songs to add to your Stream Police playlist. Friends, you know that we are creating the most perfect playlist known to man, and these are five more selections to add to your playlist. First, well, it's Sting. I Can't Stop Thinking About You.
Do I hear laughter through a veil of snow and ice? Where could you be on such a lonely winter's night?
And, you know, I'll go ahead and admit it. This one, this next song comes from left field, but it's been
a reliable guilty pleasure. It's Circus by Britney Spears. Third. Britney Spears followed by The Kinks and Low Budget.
I'm on a low budget. What would you say? I'm on a low budget.
You said that?
I'm on a low budget. I'm a compact person in a low budget.
You know what? I'm going to recommend the number one song in Germany right now, Human by Rag & Bone Man.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me.
And finally, the pride of Greenfield, Ohio, and Grand Ole Opry member Johnny Paycheck, this is She's All I Got.
Well, I said, friend, don't take her, she's all I've got. Please don't take her love away from me. I'm begging you, friend, don't take her, she's all.
Now tell me that's not an eclectic group. That's it for me. See you next time. Peace.
All right, I'm Clint Davis back with you here on the Stream Police Podcast, movies and TV editor at OverdueReview.com. Thanks to Andy for chipping in with us once again. And speaking of Nashville, I'm actually going to be going back there in just a couple weeks to cover the CMAs again for my day job. So if you remember last year, I did the same thing and brought back an episode just with some stories of meeting some of those people and being backstage at really like just kind of a weird event. I kind of just felt strange the whole time I was there, but it was fun, and it was one of my favorite episodes we've done of the show. So I'll have some more stories for you coming up in a couple weeks, but interesting to hear Andy's take on the Music City right there. All right, welcome back to the show. Like I said in the last segment, going to be welcoming somebody into the closet for the very first time ever, because really there's not enough room, and we're pretty much sitting on top of each other right now here in the closet. But I got to welcome in, you know her voice, because if you listen to the show, she does the little intro things at the beginning. It's my wife, Beth. How you doing, Beth?
Hi, guys.
And we decided to go into the closet together because we've been talking, like, for, I don't know, months, really, and really since we've ever known each other for years now. We both love movies. We both love TV. We watch them all the time together. And we frequently disagree on movies and on TV shows, especially on movies, though, it seems like. You know, Beth and I have kind of been talking about how could we incorporate that into the show a little bit and have a little back and forth. And I think we've got a good idea because there's a type of movie that we both love but that we both really kind of disagree on, and that's horror films. Like, Beth, you and I, we've seen pretty much like every great horror movie that I can think of. I think we've already seen it.
True. Our first date was actually not a great one, but we went to see the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. And I think we can both agree that that was not one of the top 10 greatest horror films of all time.
No. We both love the original, though, and that was why we went and saw that one.
First date. Good times.
Yeah, first date. So we were, I think, both disappointed by that one. But, yeah, not one of the best ones. Not really one of the worst ones I've ever seen, but just really
didn't
not.
Didn't need to be remade.
Yeah, not that memorable, and you're right. Didn't need to be remade. They didn't really add anything to it.
No.
The special effects, I feel like, were even better in the 80s one than they were in the newer one, which is kind of impressive.
I concur. And I also would like to add that Clint and I don't really argue ever, but we have gotten into some knockdown, drag-out fights over TV and movies. So this is intense. This is real life here.
Yeah, that's really like the only stuff that we have that we've fought over, honestly, is like disagreements on movies and TV shows. It sounds stupid, and it sounds like we're probably making that up, but
not at all.
it's actually true. Yeah, these are the worst fights we've ever been in have involved movies and TV shows.
True story. Holes in walls kinds of stuff.
Yeah, amazingly. But yeah, so we decided to bring it to you guys and talk again about horror movies because we've seen a bunch of them together, and like I have a definite favorite horror movie that I think is like this. I think it's the scariest movie ever, and Beth hates the movie. And then the one that she thinks is the scariest, I don't think it's an awful movie, but I don't think it's scary at all. So
it's terrifying.
We thought here before Halloween we'd kind of bring to you, you know, like both of our favorite horror movies, why we love them and why we don't like them as well. So my pick for the scariest movie ever, every time I watch it, it creeps me out. I've seen it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, and every time it actually scares me. And I really don't get that scared by any movies, but this one just does it to me. It's 1999's The Blair Witch Project.
No, that's the tree we crossed. That tree is down. That's the same one. Oh, God!
No.
Oh, no. You gotta be kidding me! This is a joke!
No.
This is not funny!
Mike, just please stop. Please stop. Please stop. Please stop.
No.
No, Mike, it's not the same log. It's not the same log, Mike.
Same log.
Look, it's not.
It is. Open your eyes.
It's not the same log.
And Beth can't stand that movie, so that's my pick. We'll talk about it in a second. And her pick is a much more classic one, if you want to introduce that one.
Yeah, it's The Exorcist. I saw it. I was too scared to watch it, actually, through my entire childhood. And I watched it maybe the first time when I was 20. And it gave me nightmares. I couldn't sleep for a week. And I do not get scared. I laugh. I laugh during scary movies. I laugh during haunted houses. I don't scare easily. But holy,
true,
holy crap, did The Exorcist just... I can't even really talk about it without being scared, especially sitting in this super dark closet.
Hey,
I cast you out, unclean spirit!
Show it up your ass!
In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ! It is he who commands you! He who flung you from the heights of heaven to the depths of hell!
Fuck him!
Be gone!
Fuck him, Garrus!
From
fuck
this
him.
Creature of God! Be gone! In the name of the Father and of the Son! The Holy Spirit.
Yeah, so she likes The Exorcist. I like The Blair Witch Project. They're movies that are separated by about 20 years, really 25 years. But I think at this point, both of those are really kind of considered classics in horror. I mean, obviously, The Exorcist has kind of always been considered a classic. It's always on the top of lists of the scariest movies, best horror movies. But Blair Witch has found its way. When it came out, it was a massive hit, made a ton of money. It made more money.
So overhyped.
It made more money than like any other movie ever on top of its budget, because its budget was microscopic.
And it looks like it.
Well, but The Exorcist was a more traditional movie, studio film. It looks good. It's got, you know, good acting in it. It's kind of theatrical in ways, but so they're different movies. So yeah, we kind of come at them from different ways. So why does The Exorcist scare you so much, though? What is it about that movie? Because I've seen it a bunch of times, and I never really get scared by that movie. And
oh,
I think
God.
The first time I saw it, I was probably 12, and it didn't really scare me then either.
Yeah, so I think it was just the fact that I grew up, like, really religious, and demon possession has always been, you know, one of those topics that is just terrifying. But when I first watched it, I think the kicker for me is the fact that it is so 70s, and it's so gritty, and it's so real, and even though, like, the special effects are kind of cheesy sometimes, like the projectile vomiting.
Very
but
cheesy.
They are, I'll give you that, but just the idea of it and the church involvement and just the fact that, you know, it's this little girl who's just taken. It's just, it's the premise of it is so terrifying for a girl who grew up in a religious home. And the execution is so good and it's so classic and it just builds and builds and builds. And some of those scenes just make your stomach turn and just the stuff of nightmares.
I do think that I think The Exorcist looks really good. Like, I love.
It looks great.
I love the, like, fog outside. I mean, it's all, like, really kind of classic horror stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not – they didn't reinvent the wheel with it the way it looked. It was a different kind of story to tell, and I think the fact that they said that it was, like, based on a true story, basically,
right.
What kind of added to it, and that was an original thing that they did. But
and it's been built on so much. I mean, people have done the exorcism genre so much, but that original one is just – it's great, and I think it's got a lot in common with a movie that we both really like, which is Rosemary's Baby. And just
– yeah, I love that.
And just kind of that sense of foreboding that, you know, something sinister is lurking in the shadows of our world, and that's terrifying. It's so scary. Much scarier than a witch in a wood that you never actually see.
Okay. Well, hold on a second. But the atmosphere-wise, I mean, not even – to compare The Exorcist to Rosemary's Baby is not – Rosemary's Baby is better atmosphere than, like, any scary movie ever. So Exorcist doesn't even come close as far as that goes.
Oh, my God.
And it's not nearly as frightening just because it is so unbelievable and it's such a phony story. And
not
it's just,
unbelievable.
It's cheesy. It is unbelievable.
If you went to church 3 times a week, all right, people? Not unbelievable. Totally believable.
But, I mean...
And you listen to demon voices on tape your entire childhood. Like, Bible... Okay, guys, if you have kids and you want to terrify the ever-living shit out of them, make them listen to a dramatic reading of the New Testament with all the demonic possessions. It just puts an idea in those kids' minds, and they will never get it out.
So The Exorcist really scared you because of other things that...
But it's a scary movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's legendary for being scary.
It is legendary.
It's not a classic for no good reason.
That's true. It's been copied a million times over. I think both the movies that we're talking about have been copied a million times. Like, they've been ripped. They've both been ripped off 100 times. Exorcist, everyone's done those exorcism movies now. There's, like, a new one every year. And with Blair Witch, everyone's done the found footage, like, to death. I mean, it kind of, in the, like, 10 years after it came out, everyone was doing found footage.
But there are better found footage movies. There are better found footage movies in the Blair Witch Project.
There are really good ones, and Record is the one that I think is probably the best found footage movie. But I don't know what it is about Blair Witch, but the movie scares me so much because you talk about raw. I mean, The Exorcist is not gritty at all compared to Blair Witch or compared to like Texas Chainsaw. The Exorcist looks like a theatrical production compared to those movies. I mean,
it's very well
put together.
It is well put together, but I'm talking about like the 70s gritty, yeah. Whatever kind of film they were using, that's more your specialty than mine, but whatever it was, it yeah. worked. It worked well for what they were trying to convey.
But how do you get more gritty than just home tape? I mean, this was just digital tape. This was not film. They weren't filming anything. They were just kids with cameras, and I mean, they were college students in the woods trying to make a movie. So if you've never seen Blair Witch Project, it's about these kids, these film students that go out into the woods in Maryland, and there's this legend. They interview people around town. That's kind of the beginning of the movie.
That's
they
so
have
boring.
Some they have some interviews telling them about the witch, telling them about and dropping subtly some of the hints of things that are going to come. And these three
these three
film students go into the woods, led by this girl who's going to be the director of the movie named Heather.
She's
a little bit obnoxious, but I mean, hey, she's not a flawless character. But over time, you do feel for her because she doesn't know where she is. These woods are trapping them, it feels like. And there's just it's like Jaws in a way because you really never see anything. It's all atmosphere.
But you see Jaws. That's my number one complaint with the Blair Witch Project. You don't see it. There's no reveal.
They didn't have the money
but
for it.
I don't care. Quarantine. Once again,
record.
Sorry. I went American there. Record. that you see something. That there's a moment in Record
for sure.
where it scares the living crap out of you. But
it's a bigger budget movie though.
But Blair Witch Project, it's all this build and no reward. There's nothing. It doesn't you don't know what happens, and I hate that.
That to me is what makes it so scary.
Because
even when the end happens, you still aren't sure what was
it
that happened.
You don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And that's what's the point?
But you know from the beginning when they tell you that they found the footage that these kids, that these students don't exist anymore. They're gone. But they never found their bodies. So it's like, were they taken to some other dimension? Were they? I mean, what happened? Because there's so many weird things. Like when they're in the woods, it seems like time disappears. It's like they walk into another dimension. It's not Earth anymore. It's what's really happening there,
scary.
I feel like.
It's
a scary idea.
It's not scary.
If you've ever been in the woods and spent the night
in the woods.
I mean, that's a terrifying idea. Somebody being outside the tent, like making noise and doing things. I mean, that's horrifying.
It's a lot
and then you go
build.
Out there and there's nothing there.
It's a lot of build and no reward. There's no payoff.
The reward's in your head, though. It's all in your head.
I've said before, if I watched the Blair Witch Project and it wasn't such a phenomenon as it was, whatever, 99, when, you know, we were kids, it would be totally forgettable. It would have no lasting impact on me. I wouldn't think back and say, oh, yeah, I remember that movie. No, it would be completely forgettable. There's no reward. There's no big reveal. There's nothing that leaves a lasting mark other than the fact that it was iconic for the time. That's the one defining characteristic of the Blair Witch Project.
It is original, and it was a new way to do a horror movie. And again, the fact that they could do this movie for so cheap, and they made people really think that it happened because actors...
That's what I'm saying. It was a phenomenon.
The actors didn't do interviews. They, like, weren't allowed to do interviews, really. And then I remember they all came out at the MTV Movie Awards, and that was kind of like when the fourth wall was broken. And it was like, oh, they're not real. They didn't really die. I mean, you knew that they didn't, but it was in some way you kind of thought maybe they did because there were no big-name actors in this. No one could... The people that were in the movie still have never been in anything else since then.
But I feel like it's a Titanic kind of issue where, like, you know, Titanic was a good movie. It was a fine movie. But when it came out, the late 90s were just chock full of these phenomenon movies that just came out and everybody went and saw them. And it was, you know, a topic of water cooler conversation. But Titanic is a fine movie. But once again, if it wasn't the big event that it was, you wouldn't remember it.
You think The Exorcist wasn't
line.
A big event? I mean,
oh,
everyone hypes that
was,
up so much.
But if for good reason, is what I'm saying. That's
not for good reason.
Yes, for good reason.
The Exorcist is just so long. I mean, there's like 45 minutes of setup.
When do you ever complain about a movie being long?
When it's a movie that's supposed to scare me, it's just too much setup, and it's all
Rosemary's Baby.
That movie's all set up. That's why it's so good. I mean,
but I don't understand your argument.
It's because Rosemary's Baby is to me like a character study, whereas The Exorcist is supposed to just scare you. The characters aren't that good in The Exorcist. They're just not. I mean, they're not that memorable. The mom is not very memorable. The girl is not very memorable because we never really get to know her. She's just a generic little girl. And the priest is the best character.
The priest is the best character.
The young priest is the best character in the movie.
You feel for him.
You do.
You feel for his spiritual struggle and for, you know, what he's going through trying to figure all this out.
He's the best part of the movie,
that's
for sure.
That's one more rememberable. That's one more good character than the Blair Witch Project has.
Yeah, one more. To me, though, the Blair Witch Project, it's apples and oranges. It's not a movie about characters. That's not the point. I don't really. You're right. The characters are not people that I love or anything, but the movie just scares me. It makes me feel like I'm there. It makes me feel like I'm in the tent with them. It terrifies. It just is unnerving to me. The sound editing is so good. And if you watch that movie in the dark, like, I wish I could have seen it in theaters. I think it would have just been so impressive the first time, because there's nothing else like it. Whereas The Exorcist is a traditional movie. I mean, you go, you know what's going to happen. You know, in the end, pretty much everything's going to be all right.
Okay, so when she's projectile vomiting, when her head is spinning around, that doesn't scare you? That doesn't give you a visual?
Because it looks so goofy.
It doesn't look goofy.
When her head spins around, it's so silly looking.
That's another thing I like about The Exorcist, is it's real effects. It's not CGI. And it adds to that atmosphere. It adds to that gritty feel of, you know, this could happen. And it fed into my my upbringing of, this could really happen. I'm not scared of a witch in the woods that never shows herself. It's not scary. It could be raccoons out in the woods. This noise.
No,
I'm sorry.
There's enough evidence. They show you evidence of bad things happening. You just don't see the actual witch. So yeah.
But to me, that's what
makes it interesting, though. Because, again, you walk away talking about it, wondering what happened. It's not all spelled out for you. Whereas with The Exorcist, everything is there. You know what the idea is supposed to be. In the end, it's all resolved, and we can all go on our way. And what's there to talk about afterward? I mean, there's nothing to talk about.
The image is the lasting impression of a movie like that. That's my big point with Blair Witch Project. There is no lasting impression. It's
oh my God, the very last scene is so intense.
You don't know anything. Nothing happens.
It's so well done, though.
Nothing happens in that movie. Nothing. They get lost in the woods. I saved you an hour and a half of your life. They get lost in the woods.
See, we can't see eye to eye on this one.
No.
We're just never going to.
No.
But it's really about scares, and it's like, what scares you? And I think that's what's really cool about horror movies, because
it is. It's all from where you come from, all your backstory, what scares you.
Because like I said, I mean, with The Exorcist, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I just have never thought, like, it just never scared me, really. Whereas Blair Witch always scares me when I watch it. And Record always scares me when I watch it. And, I mean,
Record, even
when I first saw it, Final Destination scared the hell out of me when I first watched it. It was so goofy, but it had some pretty scary moments in it, just things that you would imagine yourself happening to yourself. But, yeah, so just The Exorcist doesn't scare me because it's just too polished, I feel like. And it's too unbelievable to me. Like, it's
so
something
scary.
That could never. It's something that just could never happen to me. So
listen to the Bible on tape for a while, and you will change your tune, sir. It'll be changed.
But yeah, both of those movies that we like have really turned into cliches over time. The stuff that's in them. I mean, that's kind of the bad thing. They both were great ideas that kind of have been run into the ground. And it's funny because Blair Witch was just a sequel to it. Just came out this year. I think it was called Blair Witch, and I didn't see it, but I'll probably see it just because I love the first one so much. But there was a sequel to that this year, and The Exorcist is back on TV now on Fox. So it's like both of these movies that we like so much have been kind of continued this year. So it does talk to the lasting impact, I feel like, of both of those movies. And even if you don't think it's scary, Beth, a lot of people thought The Blair Witch Project was scary.
Oh,
so I'm not alone, okay?
Hey, a lot of people thought The Exorcist was scary, all right?
That's true, but I didn't. I wasn't one. All right. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. We argue about movies, but in the end, we'll continue to go see them together. And I don't know what new horror movies we're going to watch this year. Like I said, feels like we've already seen them all. You've never seen Hellraiser, though, so that's the one that I want to get you to watch next, because it's so – that one's really good and creepy.
Yeah. The Pinhead guy kind of has dissuaded me from wanting to watch that.
Why? He's so creepy.
I don't know.
He's got that great, really deep voice.
I just the visual of it. I don't know. I mean, like I said, I don't scare easily, but sometimes, you know, sometimes some of those visuals, I don't know.
Just like, what, like, they turn your stomach or what?
Yeah, like for example, one that I refuse to ever talk about, but for you, audience, I will mention this one. Clint and some of his friends watched The Human Centipede once, and I really can't even think about that movie. Like, just those images.
I'm not even allowed to ever bring it.
No,
like,
he's not.
I can't even bring the name of that movie up.
It's so gross. Don't Google that if you don't know what it's. Don't just don't.
Don't see the movie either.
Save yourself.
It's not good. There's nothing good about the movie.
I think I went and like hid in the back room while that was on. It's like, don't turn it down.
They actually made three of them.
Oh God.
They made a trilogy out of that. So maybe that'll become a TV show on CBS or something. Human Centipede the series. They'll keep adding a new person
Stop!
Every week.
It's so bad.
All right. Well, anyways, Beth, thanks for coming to the closet. My glasses are steaming up, so I think it's time
hot.
To call it a night.
All right.
Maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Okay.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to the Stream Police podcast. Come back in a couple weeks. We'll have another great show for you. Again, I want to thank our music editor, Andy Sedlak. And if you can't get enough of us, go over to overduereview.com and read reviews of long-form reviews of classic movies and classic records and some new stuff as well, but mostly older stuff that just deserved a second and maybe a final look. So you can check that out, again, at overduereview.com. I'm Clint Davis, movies and TV editor over at Overdue Review, and I want to thank you again for listening. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Until then, stream on, my friend.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.